just like starting over. Starting over.
Look out.
Our lives together, they're so precious.
Quite right too. And of course, if it is starting over, you might be considering starting up your own business in terms of startups, pip-ups, pop-ups, all sorts of other wonderful things. We have the co-author of an awesome text all about starting up an entrepreneurial geniuses, etc., Richard Hall, with us now. Richard, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Now, let's just get the title of this book sorted out first, Richard, because it is, of course, entitled...
Startups, Pivots and Pop-Ups.
Startups, Pivots and Pop-Ups. So talk us through that to start off with, really, because, you know, it is a case of, you know, every year and every month, it would seem, we're doing features on young entrepreneurs and the importance of young entrepreneurs. Talk us through your sort of thinking behind this text.
Well, what we're seeing is what we call the startup revolution. Something has changed. Since 2008, there's been an acceleration, more young businesses starting, more businesses overall. Business startups last year increased by nearly 10% compared with the year before. And the reason for that is, quite simply, people want to take control of their lives. They want to stop working for large corporations. They don't really want to be employees. It's bad news if you're running a big company, but that's the harsh reality. And millennials are brilliant. I think the most brilliant, brilliant generation I've come across, fearless.
Well, that certainly makes encouraging listening, Richard. And in terms of, say, this particular text, is it a go-to guide? Is it a sort of step for people who are just umming and ahhing about the whole thing? Or is it a case of, you know, even more than that?
It's more than that. I mean, the book itself, we interviewed about 100 people of all sorts of, in all sorts of positions. We looked at people who changed their careers very, very radically, and we produced a guide. At the end, it's a very simple guide as to how to actually go about doing it, because a lot of people have got the will to do it, but don't necessarily have the skill.
And, I mean, again, that's a sort of critical point of things. I mean, you don't have to have been, you know, a news junkie to appreciate that in a few weeks' time from now, conceivably, all sorts of things could be changing in all manner of things. Is this advice that kind of can deal with all changing political climates? Or is it just a case of, well, you know, there are always going to be changes and different fair winds to sail our businesses by?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I think it's much more difficult in real uncertainty, if you've got a very complicated supply chain, if you're a very big organization, if you're operating with just-in-time technology, much more difficult. What I think's going to happen increasingly is we're going to see a lot more small businesses. The whole small and medium-sized enterprise sector is generally the engine for growth in most economies, and I think that's going to grow, and Brexit, however that plays out, would encourage people to take a hard look at what they're doing and maybe start something new. Why not?
I suppose in many ways, Richard, we have, I suppose, the two binary oppositions, insofar as you can either deal with it, get on with it, keep addressing the sort of issues, or begin to turn your back on it and wither away on that sort of system. I mean, it is one of those aspects that, you know, unfortunately, through probably no fault in any way, shape or form, it's something that, as Macmillan once said, events, dear boy, events.
This is a big event. Withering away is not an option, I think. One of the figures that staggered me when I looked at the stats is that 70% of young people want to start their own businesses. Doing it is a separate thing, but the desire's there. And if you look at other economies in the world, it's much, much lower. We are essentially an entrepreneurial society.
Mm. I think it was Napoleon who described us once as a nation of shopkeepers.
He did indeed. He did indeed. It was Muhammad Yunus. I'll give you another quote. Muhammad Yunus, who won the Nobel Peace Prize some time back, he opened a bank in Bangladesh, and that's why he got the prize. But he said human beings, ever since they were cavemen, were entrepreneurs. It just got educated out of us during the Industrial Revolution, and we started to become slaves. I think that's over.
Interesting, because again, obviously, the notion of wage slaves and the slave economy, that's a whole new field, and yeah, interesting sort of times very much lying ahead, and hopefully not in the Chinese curse sense of the word. You know, that's hoping optimistic.
I think they're exciting times, not interesting times.
I do get that sense, Richard, from what you've been saying today, that actually there is a dynamism that's actually around, and it's nice to know that despite some of the pejoratives that have been labelled, such as the snowflake generation, the Generation Zs, and so on and so forth, that actually there is a sign that maybe in the 21st century all is not lost, and actually there's everything to play for.
I think that's absolutely right. I think they're young, they're hungry, they're fearless, and there are pockets that certainly young people have created, pockets of innovation and enterprise, and once that momentum builds, it becomes catching, because once your friends start to open something, open a new business, you think, why not me?
Oh, absolutely. Richard, where can people go to find out more details about this text online and other wonderful places in cyberspace?
It's the book, Startups, Pivots and Pop-Ups, is available on Amazon, all good bookshops, obviously. There's an audio version of it as well, and currently it's just around £10.
Oh.
So we enjoyed writing it, but we think and hope that it helps people through what may be difficult, interesting, but we suspect will be interesting times. And we hope there's more exciting times. Sorry, I hope they expect it more exciting and easier to fulfill a few dreams.
Absolutely. Startups, pivots, as opposed to divots, easily confused. That's a different line entirely.
That's right.
And pop-ups, as you say, available now. Richard, it's been a pleasure sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Alex, I hope so. Have a very good weekend, and good luck.
Many thanks.
As drugs affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. One tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was the recipe?
That's the recipe.
If you would like a more simple solution,
you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Now, from the world of interesting facts and figures, it would seem that the United Kingdom needs an additional 38,000 workers with computer science skills, including 21,000 more computer science graduates, each year to actually meet labour demands as we continue our love affair with information technology, etc. What is the solution? Well, maybe, just maybe, it's in the sights of Amazon Future Engineer, because Amazon Future Engineer is indeed coming to the United Kingdom, and to actually talk about this, who better than the Director of Consumer Retail at Amazon, the awesome Fiona McDonald. How are you, Fiona?
Good morning, Alex. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful. Now, in terms of this particular aspect, I mean, clearly there's a big gap that needs to be filled in terms of skill sets and other elements within this. I mean, you know, the ballpark suggests £33 billion per year could be lost by 2030 if we don't sort this through. So is it a case of, well, thank heavens for Jeff Bezos and his boys and girls?
I think, firstly, it's about the 33 being able to be won as an opportunity rather than losing. But let me take a step back and share a little bit of what we're doing. So Amazon Future Engineer is a comprehensive program, and it's from going from childhood classroom through to early adulthood. And essentially what we're trying to do is inspire and educate and enable young people to, you know, join what we think is an exciting career in computer science. And that's for all people around the country, all backgrounds. Now, specifically, if I just, you know, talk about those inspiring moments, for primary school children, we're inviting up to 10,000 pupils into our sites around the country for robotics workshops so they can actually get hands-on with the technology that we use every day to deliver our customer orders. And for secondary school children, it's about you know, providing more points to make informed choices, and so we're going to be funding the recruitment and training of 250 careers professionals, of which 50 are computer science teachers, so that we can bring our expertise and our passion for this topic into the classrooms to help people choose, because they do need to choose to study these things. And beyond 18, we know we're extending our bursaries and our apprenticeships programs to help people that otherwise might not get the opportunity of studying in computer science to follow their dream of doing so. And personally, if I just give you my personal element here, you know, I started as an engineer, and I obviously worked for a company that wasn't here when I was in education. So, you know, it's about fun, you know, starting with getting those passionate moments and helping equip people with skills or building blocks that can take them in different directions. But obviously, we'd hope that they use those to choose to study and then ultimately work in computer science.
Now, as you rightly said, the Amazon Future Engineer Programme is a childhood to career programme. Clearly, one of the aspects about education, we like to believe it's a way of leading out a child's inner potential and so on. So you've got the inspirational, educational elements that come across from that point of view. But I suppose particularly significant is this is also targeting young adults from low-income backgrounds, which clearly can be a good help in terms of presumably social mobility as well.
Yes, I know, you know, to be very clear about this, this is open to, you know, all backgrounds from everywhere around the company, the country. The robotics workshops, for example, will be taking place in our fulfillment centres, you know, nine of which they are actually situated in some of those lower income areas. But this is for everybody, but particularly when you look at the help which we're giving, you know, the 18 plus and also the way Teach First, who are we're partnering with on the secondary school teachers, how they, you know, locate their resources, that tends to go to those areas which, you know, maybe for no fault of their own, sometimes excluded from the same progress in education.
There will inevitably, Fiona, be one or two folk who might be listening to this who might be just a wee bit sceptical. They might be a bit concerned about, oh, is this, you know, a major company getting involved with things that actually have got all kinds of other aspects behind them? We've heard about, obviously, the reluctance of folk to get engaged with big industry, etc.
Yeah.
Is that a challenge that they're such, okay, fine, that's the reason I'm doing interviews like this, to actually sort of start beginning to assuage fears?
I mean, I do the interviews like this myself because, one, I'm a mum, you know, two, I'm an engineer who came through in whatever route, but
sure.
I'm passionate about doing this. But, you know, to answer your point about, you know, how do we get to be doing this in the first place, you know, we ask ourselves, you know, not who should be doing this, but actually can businesses do more? And we, you know, we're doing our bit here. And if you look at, if you take the digital economy, and if I describe that as the multitude and rise of phones, of tablets, of, you know, connected devices and young people's incessant desire to be, you know, constantly connected to Wi-Fi, that is the digital economy, and it's everywhere, and it's only going to grow. So we want to do our bit in actually sharing a passion for how you can get involved in that and how we can help people skill themselves up to find, you know, suitable work and a future in that.
I think it was the late scientist and writer, of course, Arthur C. Clarke, who said that we got it completely wrong, or at least writers such as Clarke have got it completely wrong in terms of failing to predict the obsession we're going to have with screens in the near future, etc. Is part of this future engineering workshop also going to tie into the notion of imagineering, actually saying, well, what about wearables? What about kind of connecting directly to the mind through contact lenses and so on and so forth?
I mean, all those things are happening. You know, AI is, you know, is being researched and being built in many places. But this particular program, you know, if I bring it back to what it's about, it's the core thing is about inspiring people, because, you know, people can choose to do certain things, but if they get to a point in life where they maybe haven't done some of the educational building blocks you need, it may not be an appealing step for them to take. And I do know myself, and also how I see my kids interact with technology, they love it. You know, they're happy to be on a tablet and they do stuff. And I would love myself to help make Moments in Education the same passionate, you know, resonance. And I don't know how you certainly experienced stuff in school, but I can, to today, as an older individual, still remember the delight I had when I connected physical cables together and made a light bulb come on. And, you know, that's probably some of the reasons why I ended up going into engineering, because where the theory left me not necessarily stimulated, the practical application of the stuff is what sort of sticks in my mind. And what we're doing here is connecting what people are learning by inviting them into the world that we work in to see practical applications of the stuff which they're learning, to hopefully not lose the passion they may have along the way.
Okay, see, Fiona, I was more of a chemist and biologist, you see, that's why the degrees went there. So the physicists are actually, although I have a fascination with cosmology, I just thought, no, it's just step away from that whole side of things, but each to their own. Listen, on terms of the way that this is progressing, it's interesting to find that you're obviously working with the education charity Teach First,
yeah,
in recruiting and training 50 secondary school computer science teachers, which again could only help presumably the perception that people actually have about computer science and so on.
I mean, it's again, you know, if I go back to what I just said there about, you know, being in an industry that wasn't certainly there when I was going through education, we are working every day at advancing, you know, working with all sorts of technologies. That in, so we're basically opening our doors to bring people who are, you know, educating children to see the practical applications as they evolve. And the teachers in this program with Teach First will be able to come in on working days to Amazon, where we're able to let them see, feel, you know, and touch it as much as is physically possible, these technologies in action, to hopefully give them better metaphors or story moments when they're back in the classroom to switch on those, you know, light bulbs in young children the way that it happened to me.
Well, our annual Future 2.0 exhibition, which usually has Jason Bradbury and Mark, our robot at the University of Lincoln, often sort of, it certainly generates that kind of interest. And I think you're right that there's been a fascination with robots that goes all the way back to Carol Chappock coining the term in the 1920s. Where can people find out more details about this particular project if they, I mean, for some reason haven't actually heard about the whole process, and how, I mean, is it just go to the Amazon website, go to the sort of line of that, type in at Future Engineer, or is there a specific way?
So, you know, and your listeners, and I'm hoping they're inspired to sign up their schools, you know, if you go to www.amazonfutureengineer.co.uk, there are details there where you'll be able to register your school and indeed choose dates that may work to actually come in and come and have a hands-on go with, certainly with our robotics. We did one of them this week already, and I'm very pleased to say that we had a super excited class full of children, you know, literally programming stuff in a very similar way to the orders which were being picked, patched and packed and dispatched behind them at the time. So I'd hope your listeners would be able to do that.
And I have to ask the question, Fiona, have you got a favourite fictional robot? I mean, I'm a great fan of WALL-E personally. I mean, other people say C-3PO, R2-D2, other people would say, no, I want something completely different.
No, you know, I have to say I've never watched Star Wars or all that.
Wow.
I'm one of these people that haven't, and no, I don't have a fictional robot.
It's just, all that great robotic world that's actually out there. It's outrageous. Still, never mind. Fiona, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with yourself. Very interesting times, I think, in all sorts of ways. Who knows, next up, obviously the trip to Mars, but we'll go on that on another line entirely. But that's a key thing. Fiona McDonald, Director of Consumer Retail at Amazon, many thanks indeed.
Thank you.